Aunt Tilly always said, if you can't stand the movie head, get the fuck off the internet, you moron.
I do actually have an Aunt Tilly.
Really? That's a name?
Yeah. I think it's short for Matilda, but...
Well, I guess that makes sense.
I don't actually. I just thought that would be funny.
Well, it probably... It makes sense. You don't actually have an Aunt Tilly?
No, I don't.
You're fired. You're fired out of your own apartment.
We're only 25 seconds in and I've already got fired.
This is the earliest firing yet.
It's true.
By the way, this is the Movie Head Podcast. I'm Jesse.
I'm Lindsay.
The ex-co-host of the Movie Head
now
Podcast.
Now I just have to sit here with a dunce cap on? Is that the idea?
That's
in the
right.
corner?
They'll be able to hear your dunceness through the microphone.
They'll be able to hear me check in.
That's right. yeah, what's going on, gang? Welcome back. I guess we had a bit of a hiatus. 10 days or something.
Yeah.
We got some sun, some sand, some love, some laughs. Actually, none of those
things. Speak for yourself. I was going to say, where was all this in my life?
Yeah, I'm pasty as hell and angry and bitter at the world. This podcast has got depressing.
Yep.
No, it's not that bad. Things are actually going good. Yeah.
Jesse's all busy and stuff, and I'm all busy
out,
and stuff.
Bros. Got three jobs now. Four if we include the podcast. Five if we include the band. Six if we include just being a rad dude.
Let's just go with five.
No, we're going with six, because I often get approached on the streets, and they say, are you a rad enough dude to, and then insert rad thing here? And I say, yes. Hmm. So, that's a thing.
Are you a rad enough dude to stay on your skateboard whilst drunk? Oh, no.
Yeah, I did. Too soon, bro.
Too soon? Too soon. I don't know. I think it's probably soon enough.
No!
Yeah.
It's too soon. Not enough time has passed.
Salt in wounds.
The wounds
Salt
have yet
wound.
To heal, except for the actual broken elbow, which has fully healed.
I was going to say, if it's healed, it's okay for me to put jokes about it.
It healed for a very long time. In fact, that was too late. That wasn't topical enough. Your hack. You fired twice.
Man.
You fired so bad, you're back on the podcast.
I am so hack. It's true.
You are hack ass. Anywho.
So we've had a good couple of weeks. We saw a few films. I haven't really been keeping up with news or anything, though. I'm back to school, and so I haven't had a chance to read much. But I'm guessing you're on the interweb more than I am, so maybe you have some news.
Not really a whole lot to report on. One thing that made the rounds topical. Well, you've got the movie there. Everybody's hyping about where those two superheroes, Superman and
God.
Batman.
Oh God, are we still talking about this?
Well, the world is still talking about this. I personally don't give half a shit about it.
Yeah, neither
Not
do
even
I.
a full shit. But no, but you can't log into any site on the internet without grinding up against some Superman and Batman bullshit.
Yeah.
In any case, everybody's favorite young pop starlet, Justine Bieber.
Like you just called him Justine Bieber.
That's not how it's pronounced.
Go ahead.
Fair enough. He got sent a script of the movie, a page of it, and he posted on his Twitter
of course
or his
he
Instagram,
did.
As you know, everybody did back when they were a kid.
Except he's in his early 20s and probably should be a bit more intelligent than that, but...
I hate that kid so bad. Anyway, he posted a photo of him holding the script, you know, doing like a gangster face or trying to look tough when you're 65 pounds soaking wet.
Was it as a selfie?
I guess.
Ugh, that's even worse. Like, selfie of... Ugh, gross.
Either that or he got somebody in his mad crew to take the photo.
Somebody in his entourage.
Yeah. But so, in any case... The script just got sent to him, so I guess he could hype about it. And I don't know what the mentality behind that is. But whoever on the Superman, Batman production staff thought, hey, if we send this out to Justin Bieber, people are going to be talking about the movie because nobody's fucking doing that,
man,
huh? Because
nobody was talking about it beforehand. Leave it to Bieber.
Yeah. God damn it. No, you're fired again. You are fired again. Leave it to Bieber.
Oh, I didn't even realize I'd done that.
You are fired. You are infinity fired.
That was totally not meant to be what it was.
You are fired forever. You know the infinity, the loop, the little H on its side? That's you fired for eternity.
All right, keep going with your story. That was totally unintentional.
And totally unexcusable. Inexcusable. Whatever. Oh, that was so terrible, I've lost my English verbal skills. In any case, so we got sent this script, and he posts this picture on his fucking Instagram, Twitter, whatever, and the, you know, asthmatic fanboys who are already popping Nexits over this stupid movie lost their minds, because they all assumed that Justin Bieber was going to be in the movie.
Oh, okay.
I think he later went on to clarify to say, no, I just got sent this to read. Sorry, peeps. LOL. Hashtag YOLO bros. But fucking people were losing it. Like, people swearing, I'll never watch another Zack Snyder movie again. Blah, blah, blah. All because this fucking idiot kid sent out this picture of the script. And that's just, that's funny to me that people are that committed to this movie that's not even started shooting.
Yeah.
They're willing to boycott and scream and do all this without any even hint of, like, hey, maybe look into this. Maybe read the caption that this stupid kid put on the photo as he uploaded it. Like, at yeah. no point when he's like, hey, bros, guess who's in the next movie? He's just like, hey, look what I got. And you got,
yeah.
That was it. Like, in any case, it dovetails quite nicely into just the fact that this generation we belong to are idiots. They're the dumbest. They're dummies. They're not smart.
Many of them are.
Not many sounds
you
pretty
said,
high.
You said the generation that we belong to.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to clarify that I do not count myself as a member of the same generation as Justin Bieber.
Well, okay.
You maybe can count yourself as the same generation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. You're 5 decades older than me. You remember the invention of the steam train. Wait, come on.
I was there when the printing press came around.
You go straight to hell. You're still fired. Okay, for...
I remember bootlegging alcohol.
For the viewers at home, well, you're 3 years older than me?
Four. Oh, I think four. I'm 4 years older than you.
3 and 9 months. Thank you very much. 4 years...
Either way, point is, I don't think either of us would count ourselves as the Justin Bieber generation.
We wouldn't count ourselves as that because it's such a shameful generation. But according to statistics in the world at large, nobody gives a shit. It's all the same. Ugh. Everybody's just going to look at us in the same group and say, these fucking kids. Just like I looked at everybody in the theater today and said, these fucking assholes. But
yes,
I'm getting
true.
Ahead of myself. We saw, between the last podcast and this, we saw 2 films.
Yeah, we saw two together. Yeah.
So the first of which we won't cover as much because there's not a whole lot there, admittedly.
No. And it's been long enough that my rage has sort of
just
nullified
barely.
A little bit.
Just barely. Your bile has just, like, gone down below puke level. You were still foaming at the mouth talking about a car ride over.
Yeah, I was foaming a little bit. It was pretty terrible, but...
That was the movie We're the Millers we saw, which, now, again, pretty divisive movie, because I praise it as high art. Lindsay, not so much.
Definite low art.
No, it's
and not,
it's not
even
art.
Art.
It's not art in the least.
I was going to say art is a bit of a stretch.
We both went into it with the same, I think, expectation. This is just a paint-by-numbers Hollywood summer popcorn movie. That's that.
Summer, like, gross-out slash over-sexualized
well,
popcorn
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, it's like the teen sex romp comedy or whatever.
But
the
for
road
young adults.
Trip or
like, I wouldn't say that this is for kids.
Well, not kids, by no means, no. But I mean, like, you look at, you know, okay, a movie like The Hangover, Road Trip.
Okay,
just, like,
yeah, yeah.
Dumb
kind of,
like, just out of high school, college bros, like, whatever. That's
I like
the,
that college bro comedy. I
yeah.
think that's kind of what it was.
College bromedy.
College bromedy.
So, yeah, this was definitely that kind of target demographic, which I guess I fall under. I'm of college age.
You're so not a bro, though.
Well, no, not in the least, but that's the age range they're aiming for.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
I'm within that, you know.
Yeah.
And males between 18 to 35. That's
I'm a little beyond that, so.
Oh, shut up. I don't know how, but I'm going to edit your mic out. And just have me twice.
All right, go ahead.
In stereo. So yeah, it was, you know, my expectations were quite low going in. I have to give all the credit in the world to Jason Sudeikis, because I love that man, he's great. And he was just, you know, it was higher than my expectations. There were funnier jokes than I thought there was going to be. And holy shit, there was some kid, I don't think the son in it, or
yeah.
the son, quote unquote. the virgin kid. I don't think he's been in anything else, but...
No, I don't think so.
He pretty much sold it for me, but
he definitely, of anybody in it, aside from... And this isn't a spoiler because it's in the trailer, but aside from the scene where Jennifer Aniston does, like, a ridiculous striptease, which is so hot, he steals the movie, if I were to say steals.
Yeah.
Or, like, he was at least the high point of the movie.
Absolutely, yeah. He's got chops, and they use him very well. Again, it's just... It was well written. It was funny. I laughed a lot more than I thought I was going to laugh.
Yeah.
And
so, basic premise: Jason Sudeikis is a sort of low-end, mid-to-mid-range drug dealer. He's doing well for himself, but by no means, you know, living the high life. No pun intended. And he gets robbed. People take his money. He's like, "Oh crap! What am I going to do?" So his boss, played by Ed Helms? Yeah. Sends him to Mexico to pick up a shipment, which, surprise, surprise, ends up being way bigger than he anticipated. But in order to get across the border, he decides to hire a fake family for himself so that they are a little more inconspicuous in crossing the border. So he ends up hiring, like, his neighbor kid, who seems to just have sort of been abandoned by his mother, who's, like, been gone for weeks or something, apparently.
Yeah.
And then this homeless girl that lives in his neighborhood, kind of, and then Jennifer Aniston's character who lives in his building and is a stripper, and yeah.
They never really touch directly on it, but it's just kind of funny and telling that this guy has a very big job to do, very important, and he needs to build himself a team to make this believable, and he goes no further than a block outside of his own apartment building to find the people. That just made me chuckle when I realized, I'm like, oh, yeah,
you get this crack team.
He took a day to find two people that live in his building and a girl that was hanging around outside the front of his building.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of hijinks that I'm sure you can figure out in your own head. They run into, what's that guy's name? You really like him. What's that guy's name?
Oh.
The comic dude, Nick Offerman?
Nick Offerman, yeah.
Yeah, so Nick Offerman and another woman who I recognize.
Catherine Hahn.
Oh, okay. End up playing this very sort of straight-laced couple that drive an RV that they run into, and there's all kind of hijinks that occur with them and their daughter. And
it's very much set up in a way that, you know, it's predictable. You can see where things are going. You can kind of see how they're all going to play out. There's action elements, there's whatever. It by no means was this like a super original story or like groundbreaking in its delivery, but they cast it very well. Like, Ed Helms as a smarmy drug dealer, I could watch 40 more minutes of that. Because he took what everybody hated about him in the last few seasons of The Office and made that a hateable character. And it was great. Yeah, Nick Offerman, he's just wonderful. And I can't defend it because I'm like, oh, it was so brilliant. Don't you remember when that kid got bit on the dick by a spider? That was genius!
Because
it wasn't. But, you know, it was still... I laughed a lot harder than I thought I was gonna.
I guess the thing that I find problematic about these, and I don't know that anyone who knows me is gonna be surprised by this, is that there's this, like, backhanded kind of homophobia that exists in films like this, where you're not really supposed to take the jokes seriously, but the fact that they exist is problematic enough. Like, there's a lot of... There's a lot of reference to, like, to male characters being put in a position to sort of do sexual acts to another man in order to get through or to get by or whatever. And it's been so long that I've, like, repressed how offended I was by this at certain moments, and I probably should think a little harder as to why it bothered me so much. But there's just so many unnecessary... So many unnecessary references to people being gay or being whatever in a way that is used as a way to be funny, but it just isn't funny, and I don't know. I'm not going to be articulate about this, other than the fact that there was a lot of shit in this that really bothered me. And yet, I understand that I'm a bit of a hypocrite, because then you have a scene where Jennifer Aniston is, like, you know, parodying, like, the striptease moment from... not from Footloose, from Flashdance, and, like, all these things that are very clearly sexualizing her. But I'd like to believe that as an adult actress, she did not go into this under duress. It's not like she's, you know, an 18-year-old being told, oh, you need to have a modeling job for you that ends up being something different than it is. No. Like, she strikes me as someone who's probably pretty aware of her self-image and that kind of thing, which is, I think, why that scene didn't bother me, because I felt like she had some agency and she had some say in kind of what happened in it, whereas some of the other moments that bothered me with, particularly with the son and with the way in which he was put into certain circumstances in the film, especially with, like, there's a scene with a cop where, you know, essentially they're trying to convince the son to, like, perform oral sex on this cop so that they'll get away scot-free, and I don't know, there's just a lot of things in here that I just found were pretty base humor and just rubbed me the wrong way. But we'll leave it at that.
That was no surprise to me. But in any case, I think it's a side note worth mentioning. When I first heard about this movie, the concept of Jennifer Aniston as a stripper was the least believable thing in the world to me. Because she's, what, 40, 45?
Yes, and I'm sure there are attractive 45-year-olds.
There are. No, there absolutely are. She is drop-dead gorgeous. But have you ever heard of a 45-year-old stripper?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
Yeah.
Do they look like Jennifer Aniston?
I wouldn't say entirely like Jennifer Aniston, but...
I wouldn't say anything like Jennifer Aniston.
All right.
That's not a career. There's no... Because she's... I don't know. The role in this movie... They never point to the fact that she is supposed to be 45. She looks fantastic, but again, just seems like it was a weird casting choice for me. She pulled it off fantastically. Like, I'm just saying, my expectations going into it were that much lower. Jennifer Aniston's a stripper. No way. She looks fantastic. She pulled it off.
Yep.
It was a bizarre choice, that's all.
Was it just me, or was there that, like, She's My Cherry Pie song playing? Or was it something of that vein?
Oh, it was definitely like a stripper song, yeah.
I can't remember what it was, though. It's driving me a little nuts now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, regardless.
In any case,
you're me, don't see We're the Millers.
Yeah, and I don't know, it did well enough at the box office, so I'm not in the minority in enjoying it.
Oh, man, let's trust the public.
It's so much fun to be around people when they're jaded. Bitter.
I'm so bitter and jaded.
You hate everything.
But I did not hate the film that we saw tonight.
Nor did I.
Which is by no means a surprise to me. I saw the trailer for the film that we saw tonight, which was Don John, which actually doesn't open until, I think, the 27th of September or something. So we got a chance to see it a little bit ahead of time. Thanks, James.
Spoiler alert. It's got nothing to do with Don Johnson. Not even one scene.
I was like, where's the Hawaiian shirts? Where's Cheech Marin?
Where's the pushed-up sleeves? This is ridiculous.
No one's wearing white chinos.
Well, I was in the theater.
Well, Jesse was, but yeah. That's only, you know, I don't know why
that's my movie-going attire.
His loafers and his white chinos. But we went to see Don John, which is written, directed, and starring someone who I think is fantastically talented, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's dreamy.
Yeah, he's pretty... You know what? Even as, like, a total douchebag, he's dreamy. Like, not quite as dreamy.
His character.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant.
Well, yeah, but... without any background, he's a total douchebag?
All right, even though he's playing a total douchebag in this film, he's still pretty dreamy. So I saw the trailer for this probably, like, 6 or 7 months ago and was really excited because I could tell right off the hop it was intended to be... a parody, right? It's intended to poke fun at a particular subset of males in our culture, and females to a degree, but in the trailer it more so comes off as just like a parody of men, which is something that I really enjoyed in actuality, was seeing that it wasn't as one-dimensional as I think the trailer made it seem that it could have been. So the premise, very basically, is you have this guy named, his friends call him Don because he does so well with the ladies, and he's from this very sort of stereotypical New Jersey Italian family, We'll get to the family, because I know Jesse's excited to talk about it, so I'll let him do it. But it comes from this very stereotypical kind of Jersey Shore type family. Mm-hmm. And he even goes on to talk about how there's very few things in his life that he loves, and he kind of goes through the list of, these are all the things that are important to me. And the humor embedded in that is that a large theme throughout the film, which I'll talk about, is religion and spirituality and his church going, which is a really interesting element to the film. But essentially, he's just like a bar-hopping stud who picks up girls all the time and works out, and a crux of the film is that he also has a very obvious addiction to pornography. So this addiction to pornography becomes problematic when he meets what they consistently refer to as a dime, or meaning 10 out of 10,
meaning a 10,
meaning a 10, yeah. Right? Who's played by Scarlett Johansson, who I will say I've had a love-hate relationship with for the last few years. And so I was a little trepidatious going into this. I mean, there's no arguing that she is a beautiful woman. Mm-hmm. But I've taken some issue with kind of some of her roles lately. And so I was a little curious to see what she would do with this, but, so yeah, they start to date and kind of things unfold and I'll leave it at that, for the moment. But I mean, the way in which the film is set up is a really interesting commentary on what we value as a culture and as a society, and maybe I'll let Jesse throw some initial thoughts in here before I get into my theorizing.
Yeah. Well, again, the story itself, it expands a bit beyond what you get in the trailer. That it's this guy, this meathead, he's addicted to porn, starts dating Scarlett Johansson, and then his porn addiction becomes apparent. That's pretty much all you're left with in the trailer when you're watching it. The grand story in the movie doesn't go too much further than that, but the real entertainment in it is, you know, the characters and how they're portrayed, and you know, you get kind of inside John's head, the character. And for me, I don't know. It was fantastic. I mean, we both walked away loving the movie. The one thing for me, it really, I guess we'll get into the dissecting.
Okay.
But, his relationship with Scarlett Johansson, I've seen plenty of people in that relationship. They do, I think something everybody can relate with, every time they're around one another, they call each other babe or baby. And everybody's had that irritating friend.
It's like, so nauseating.
Oh, shut it. Shut your mouth. And they were dating for like a month. He's like, oh, I love you, baby. Oh, I love you too. It's like, oh my God, these fucking idiots. Like, everybody has seen that. And the one thing this movie did superbly, I can't give it enough credit for, is that there's always been kind of the trope, if you will, of the bitchy girlfriend, the controlling girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And it's usually just kind of a one-note thing, you know, oh yeah, she's got him whipped. But it never really gets explored much more than that. In this, this movie did something I didn't want to do. It made me not like Scarlett Johansson, because mm-hmm. you're not supposed to like her character, not in the least. But I had crazy respect for that, because she portrayed this controlling girlfriend just perfectly.
Well, it had dimension to it, right? It wasn't just this subtle, like you say, a lot of the times when you have the quote-unquote bitchy, controlling girlfriend, they just are flat out that, mm-hmm. right? Whereas with her, it was a slow building process where you kind of saw her slowly starting to control him, which starts out in a somewhat humorous way by her kind of holding out sexually is the beginning of the crux, or the beginning of the development of her personality. And then she sort of slowly starts to demonstrate these little character traits and gets him to do things where you're kind of like, I don't know about this girl. Like, she's got an ulterior motive, and you kind of get to see that, which is really fun and frustrating to watch at the same time.
Well, it is. Like, it's a very unhealthy relationship, and as a guy who's been in the unhealthy relationship they're showing in this movie more than a couple times, it was just so interesting to watch this unfold and kind of watch her, which, you know, again, these are believable characters with sort of ramped up stereotypes about them. Like, he's this Jersey Shore meathead. She's this Jersey girl. Ugh.
Yeah.
But...
always chewing gum.
Yeah. I don't think there was a scene where she wasn't chomping away on gum.
Gross.
But the thing about it, you kind of watch... It's not like there's expository shit. Like, she's like, watch what I'm going to make him do. But you see her kind of test the waters of when she's withholding the sex, what can she get him to do? What can she... And there's... I don't want to spoil anything away of what she does and the things she says, but you slowly see her kind of realize she's got the keys and then just run with it to as far as she can. Like,
totally.
Turn this man into a puppet of some kind.
Yeah.
And it was just really well done. It was... Oh, and again, she's not too hard on the eyes. One criticism of it, though?
What?
She is an absolute babe. They had weird... I guess this is more indicative of, like, the Jersey kind of bar scene character.
Right.
But they had, like, weird eye makeup on her. And I guess that's kind of, you know... is that what people wear to clubs? Is that what people wear in Jersey? I don't know. But it distracted the shit out of me, because I was like, wow, everything about her does look fantastic, except for her face. That is totally, like... That's not a face I'd be attracted to.
Yeah.
And I say that knowing full well that Scarlett Johansson has a face I'd be attracted to.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
They do a really good job with, like, the costuming and the stylizing to kind of create a particular mood in Jersey at the time and to, you know, demonstrate kind of what physical attributes are considered to be desirable in a particular community. Like, something that really bothered me about him and that began to change as his character developed was he was always wearing, like, sleeveless tanks with V-necks, which, again, is very sort of prototypical of a particular time and place. And I think that's something that I enjoy that the film did subtly, was that you really did start to see this progression in his character and his change just kind of after... there's a certain turning point in the film where things start to change for him, and his costuming and his hair and a whole bunch of things really start to change about him, which I found really subtle and also really effective, because it wasn't screaming in your face like, hey, look at this guy's changing so much, but they did draw enough attention to it that you noticed that he was starting to change. And I think that's one of the things that I'll give him credit for, is that it's got to be really difficult to direct yourself. And he did a really fantastic job of having moments of subtlety and having moments of sort of self-reflection and revelation where it wasn't over the top, it wasn't, you know, in your face, and it was punctuated with humor really nicely. You'd have these really, like, dramatic moments, and then you'd see him driving in his car and just, like, rocking out and, you know...
Good vibrations by Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, so you can tell that he has a really good sense of humor about things as well, which played out. I also really enjoyed the way in which the film, and I mentioned this before, the way in which the film comments on the role of religion, specifically in like in very strong Italian kind of Catholic families, the importance with which people attribute sort of this religiosity and like going to church every week, you know, without missing a beat, and if you're there 5 minutes late, the whole congregation's like, what happened to you? You know, there's this closeness and this element of confession that was really interesting throughout the film. There's kind of this recurring kind of motif of John's character in the confession booth and confessing his sins, and how you can kind of see his thought process change by paralleling that with the revelations and the confessions that he makes to the priest. And there's these really great moments where you kind of want him to have a conversation, but you realize, like, he's not talking to, like, he's talking to somebody, but they're not there to, like, be his counselor or whatever, right? Like, that's not the role of the priest. So it's kind of funny to see him, like, wanting to have these conversations about things he's realized, but having no one to share it with, because nobody in his life can really be that confident for him, right? Like, he's got his family, where his dad, who's played by Tony Danza, who is just brilliantly cast as, like, the ex-meathead sort of jock Italian father, who you can tell is exactly, you can see this projection of, like, Don is going to become this person if he continues down this path, which I found really entertaining.
To put it in perspective, if this doesn't sell you on the movie, I don't know what will. Tony Danza, his dad, I think there's one scene when he's not wearing a wife beater tank top. Like, the whole time he's just in the house watching football games, eating a eating spaghetti, wearing a wife beater, and he goes, he's always arguing with his son, and they have a very, they clash heads, that kind of thing. And at one point, he makes the statement to him, he goes, nobody understands a word you're saying. This is a line coming from Tony Danza, a man who speaks exclusively in vowels. I think I laughed the hardest than anybody in the theater when he said that.
And you can see him, like, I think the thing that I enjoyed about Tony Danza's character the most is just how much his body demonstrated his emotions. Like,
yeah.
There was literally veins popping out of his shoulders and chest when he would get upset. And it was just, it was so fascinating to watch, because I haven't seen him do anything in quite a long time, and so...
You know, I gotta say, I don't know what to... Again, I don't follow the Life and Times of Tony Danza. They stopped filming that show, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he's been up to lately, but he must have gotten in good shape for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He looks very good, but it was kind of it's one of those subtle things. Like, you know, it's still obviously something that's important to him as this kind of older version of, you know, Don John.
Mm-hmm.
Still very much concerned with how he looks.
Oh, yeah.
Still very much... You know, but it was kind of subtle, because it took a couple scenes with him in it. I'm like, holy shit, Tony Danza's cut.
Oh, yeah, he's in good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have this really hilarious conversation at one point, him and his wife, about how they met each other. And you can just see, like, the parallel between father and son is just so clear.
Yeah.
And you can just see how well, you know, how well the relationship sort of plays out between... father, son, mother, and then daughter, who we haven't mentioned yet, who I think is definitely worth mentioning, because she's sort of the silent Bob of this film, in that she shows up in every single scene that the family's in, texting on her cell phone.
Just nonstop.
Just totally not engaged, right?
Like at church, too.
And then has probably the most intelligent observation to make of anybody in the film, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, she's obviously the one that's kind of been really paying attention to what's actually been happening, so that when she does speak, not only does everybody pay attention, but it's actually very profound.
The one thing I'll say, that's kind of a... That'll be more of a trope, a character. It's usually a precocious child,
mm-hmm.
who's been there and then offers some deep insight. Oh, no, a kid would never say something like that. Oh, wow. But this was done really well, because it made sense. You know, she's an adult woman who's in every scene, just not saying anything, seeming kind of detached. And meanwhile, you know, she's picking up on things, and she has one line of dialogue. And like you said, it's very insightful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil what it is.
Oh, yeah, we'll just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
This, and she does it really, or it's Brie Larson who plays her, and I was trying to figure out throughout the whole film where I knew her from, but she plays, if anyone's seen The United States of Tara, which is I think it was on Showtime, a television show about this woman with it's not called multiple personality disorder, but anyway, I can't remember the name, but she's the daughter, and she's fantastic, so it was nice to see her in this, because she had a chance to kind of be subtle, yet have this important moment, so...
And I realized afterwards, you were looking up her IMDb page. She was also in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. She was the lead singer of Clash of Demon Head, and I forgot how much of a crush I had on her until now.
Now you know. Crushing Jessie Bercier.
She's a babe. Tell her I said hi.
And speaking of babes,
oh, yeah.
Terrible segue, because now I'm going to talk about the, like, prevalence of pornography in this film. And I think that's something that maybe if you went into this, because we saw it was a preview, right? So people just got free passes and they go to see it, and then sometimes they don't even really know what they're going to. So I wonder how many people in the theater realized that there was going to be so much, like, and it wasn't long, it wasn't drawn out. It's not like you were watching a 5-minute video of porn on, like, RedTube or something, right? But there were lots and lots of, like, cut-ins of moments and scenes from certain different pornographic films throughout the movie, just kind of used to punctuate what's happening in the plot. There's a scene where John and what's Scarlett Johansson's character's name again? I forget. Oh, Barbara. It's Barbara.
Barbara Sugarman.
Barbara Sugarman. is she a Jew? says Tony Danza's dad, or Tony Danza. not his dad. but there's a scene where they're out for dinner, and first of all, the thing that made me puke the most is I hate it when couples are in a booth and they both sit on the same side of the booth. Like, they sit next to each other instead of across from each other. That drives me fucking crazy.
You know, it just has a quick one sin. When I was thinking of, like, all the bad relationships I've been in, like, the unhealthy shit, every single one of them did that. That's now, like, a terrifying thing for me. That's something
like
I look out for.
Like, relationships that you've been in that you sat on that? Yeah. Oh, that's
like
disgusting.
Like I said, I've been in, like, three relationships where they were very similar to the one in this movie.
That is a red flag.
Well, I know this now.
If I ever see you on a date with someone sitting on the same side of a booth, I'm just going to pull you out of there and be like, I'm saving you preemptively.
I'm going to pull me out of there. If I sit down and somebody sits down with me, unless we're with two other people, I'm getting the fuck out.
That is the worst. That made me gag. There was one other thing in here that literally I almost, like, I can't remember what moment it was, but it made me, like throw up a little in my mouth. It was so gross. But anyway, what I was getting at with the porn, yes, is there's a moment where they're sitting together in this restaurant and their relationship is kind of already starting to disintegrate, and their conversation just gets punctuated by these, like, flashes, these really brief flashes of him obviously just thinking about how badly he'd rather be watching porn than sitting there in the restaurant. And so I think I'm really glad to see the way this film dealt with pornography, because first of all, I think a lot of people don't take, like, addiction or sex addiction or addiction to pornography quite as seriously as I think, as seriously as I think we probably should as a culture now, because if I think about it, you know, kids in their, like, mid-teens, late teens, that's kind of all they know. Like, that's where sex education comes from now, is from pornography. And that's not to say that I'm anti-pornography. I'm actually quite the opposite. But I think that the stuff that is readily available and that's easily accessible online is a lot of times some of the most detrimental and unhealthy portrayals of sex and you know, sexuality, and all of those things are not necessarily portrayed in a way that's, you know, that's going to give a very good idea to the viewer. I mean, as adults, I think a lot of times you can separate, you know, I realize that this is fiction, I realize that this is, you know, for entertainment and that it reflects certain cultural ideals about appearance and about, you know, sexual roles and that kind of thing. Like, you can separate that as an adult, but I have a hard time believing that, like, a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 9-year-old, you know, watching this is really going to be able to understand that difference. And if that's how youth are being raised to see sex, I think that's really problematic.
Well, one thing I'll just mention, you're saying you can separate that as an adult. Like, you
can, I
think
a lot of people can.
That's as an adult of our age and
yes,
older.
Yes, exactly.
What this film did, you know, it did a good job of explaining that there are, like, there's literally kids now who can drink and vote who've grown up since they've been sexually mature having instant access, having pornography right there on the computer.
Yeah.
You know, like, he makes a joke, oh yeah, even when I was younger, I had a VCR in my room, but, like, that's...
That's true.
Like, there are kids there who've since... You know, since they've been of age to do whatever the hell they want to do to their own body, they've been able to do it, take instant pornography right then and there.
Yeah. There's even a section in the film where we didn't even mention her, but at one point he meets Julianne Moore, who is a classmate of his, and who kind of is the antithesis of the Barbara character. Like, they're very much at polar opposite ends of the scale in the way they view sexuality and themselves and all that kind of thing. And one of the things that she asks him is, like, have you ever been able to masturbate without watching pornography? And he can't. And, like, as much as, you know, I think a lot of the people around us are like, you can't even do it. It's just like, no, that's a legitimate concern if you've gotten to the point where your, like, any of your sexual interest or arousal, like, depends solely on some kind of, like, external stimuli, like, that's a problem, and that is and I think that's where he kind of realizes that too, right, is that this has become a problem for him, and so I think it's a really great comment on our kind of cultural state with regards to sexuality and the way in which we perceive intimacy, because there isn't that separation for some people, like, that separation from sex and intimacy. So yeah, I just found his character really fascinating because I think it hit on a lot of elements that are really culturally relevant to us right now. So I found him really multifaceted, and I enjoyed it.
Another, again, like, he's the main focus of this whole movie, and he carries it the whole way. Like, it was fucking great. There was one, to kind of touch back on the aspect of the whole religion thing, he's always got a cross around his neck. He goes to church every Sunday. He's, you know, he's swearing at people in traffic. He thinks, you know, if you repent for everything he said, it's all good and well. Slate's cleared. Go back to sinning it up until next Sunday. The one thing I found really, really kind of strange, because he never, again, it's never a case of him saying, oh, it's okay, I did my Hail Marys, I'm good to go. But you see him in church every Sunday, you know, telling the priest or the father, whatever the hell it is, I'm not a religious man, about the things he's done.
That was the best sentence of the whole podcast, by the way.
Shut
go ahead.
Your damn mouth, you're fired, remember? he'll go on, you know, he'll confess his sins, been told how many Hail Marys to do, and he never does them in the church. He does them as he's working out.
In the gym, yeah.
So, as, you know, when you see guys in the gym normally, like, one, two, you know, doing their bench presses or whatever, he's doing the Hail Mary, whatever the fucking thing
is. And he's, like, reciting the Lord's Prayer.
The Lord's Prayer as he's doing his chin-ups, as he's doing his push-ups. And it was just this really bizarre, but just such a fascinating thing to watch. Like, it just kind of, it embodied that whole, I don't know, it maybe get a little risque on this one, but it embodied that whole kind of general Christian belief that it's like, no, it's okay, I'm a good person because I said these words. Like, it doesn't change a fucking thing.
Yeah.
He's still being super vain while he's reciting the Hail Marys. Like,
yeah. He's like, repenting the sins that he's actually performing at the same time.
Like, he's watching himself in the mirror, curling his biceps, and doing his Hail Mary thing. He's like, what the?
Yeah.
This is so, like, do you not see the irony in this guy? But the most frustrating part of all is that while watching this movie about a guy so unaware of his own...
Dovetails so nicely to what I was going to say.
This guy's, you know, unaware of his own ridiculousness, and, you know, we were seated in a theater with people exactly like that.
Yep.
Like, the entire feeling of this movie, the message, the parody of it all, went over everybody's fucking heads.
Yeah.
Like, particularly the section we were seated next to, but I was outside the theater when it was empty, and I was hearing a lot of the same things from people.
Yeah.
Just, like, the whole time in the movie, you know, you watch him kind of evolve from this guy who's like, oh, I'm out here to get the tens, you know, I want to fuck the hottest chick, to, you know, turning into an actual fucking person with thoughts and opinions. The entire way of the theater, why did he dump Scarlett Johansson? She was so high. Why would he
try and get back with her?
Why would he try and get back with her? He's never going to see a chick that hard.
Yeah.
And, like, there's, you know, scenes when, you know, he's, you actually see he's progressing, he's learning shit, and I hear people beside me whispering, and, you know, this is boring, this part's quiet, there should be a background song. Remember when he sang Marky Mark?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they cut back to a scene when he was searching up porn, and he's searching on Pornhub, and somebody goes, oh, I know that website, that's where I jerk off, woo!
Or, like, when we left the theater, I went in to use the washroom, and as I was coming out, I looked down the aisle of sinks to my left, and it is literally three women in heels, in, like, tight jeans with, like, the sequin designs on the back pocket, leaning in, like, primping their hair and, like, putting on their whatever. And I was just like, really? You did not take anything away from that, in that Scarlett Johansson's character was vile and reprehensible and was just, like, too many women that I know. And the fact that you didn't, like, reflect on any of that is problematic in and of itself. Like, she just reminded me of so many shallow women who, you know, are attractive, have been told they're attractive their whole lives, and feel like it's okay that they can get away with anything as a result. They can treat people like shit, they can, you know, and this isn't to generalize that all attractive women are like this, obviously, but there's certainly a type of women that know that they're attractive and know that they can pull the strings and know that, you know, there are going to be vain dudes out there that seek them out, and Oh, it was just so disheartening to see that, wow, there was this really great message made, and none of it struck home to you, the audience that hopefully it's going to get through to. Not us, who already are, like, short and bizarre-looking and have learned this lesson long ago. I say that with love.
We're already riding high on our horse that we're smarter than the rest of you fucking idiots. Hey, you mongoloids, did you catch the message behind there? No, you didn't. We'll spoon-feed it to you. Idiots.
Now we'll tell you what you were supposed to learn, what was supposed to permeate through your, like, gel
your
and hairspray
single-celled brain
head. We're such fucking snobs.
Don't lump me in with you, you vile villain. You got fired from this podcast long ago.
Terrible. So anyway, I think I could probably go on and on a little more about this film, because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was probably one of the most interesting social commentaries that I've watched in a long time, done in a way that was intelligent, that was self-aware. I have to give huge props to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because this is his directorial debut. I was saying Jesse on the way home, it's like, it was his production company, hit record, that put this out. He directed it, he wrote it, he starred in it. I think this is a huge step forward for him, because I've always thought he was talented, so hopefully this will get the attention of, you know, some people out there that didn't notice prior to this, and so I do really hope that he gets some kind of, you know, recognition or acclaim for this, because it was a pretty fabulous first foray into the world of directing, and his performance is great as well, so.
I really hope for better things for this handsome, rich actor who's already been on TV in the movies. I hope he finally pulls through.
It's not what I mean. I like to see talented people do well.
Oh, yes, and he's absolutely deserving.
And I would so much rather see him do well than, like, some other D-bag. Not other D-bag, because he's not a D-bag. I keep calling him a douchebag. He's totally not.
Why are you doing this? I thought he was your friend.
He is my friend.
If you try and say that Channing Tatum's some kind of D-bag, I'm going to slap you right in the mouth.
Speaking of, if you like Channing Tatum, he pops up a little bit in this as well.
He does. Yeah. a very hilarious cameo.
Him and Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
surprise.
Nice.
It was nice.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend it. I would say go see Don John when it opens.
Yes.
Go in, you know, with the mindset that you need to be a little critical with this, because if you take it at face value, you're going to be like the people we were sitting with.
Yeah. And every time we sit in a crowd like that, I keep fearing that we're getting one step closer to ass the movie. So please go out and support this. You know, I couldn't recommend it any higher. It's fantastic.
So see this, avoid at all costs We're the Millers.
Oh, come on. Go on like Cheap Tuesday or some shit.
No, don't. Go see this. Go see Don John twice instead.
All right, I can't argue with that.
And we will be back next week with some more movie reviews for ya. And yeah.
I guess the one thing, we're juggling around different schedules right now. So I don't know when we're going to be posting regularly, but when we get it all set and figured out, we'll let you know.
You'll be the first to know.
Yes, listener.
Yeah, listener. Thanks, Nate.
Well, all right. Let's put this baby to bed.
You bet. So thanks again for listening to us. You can check us out on the Twitter. We are at MovieHeadCast. Send us an email, movieheadpodcast@gmail.com. Or more than anything, subscribe to us on iTunes. Tell your friends. Yeah. Spread the word.
You can text us on our phones. That's 204-555-1759.
Mine is just 555-5555.
Original.
That's how it works.
Really?
You know.
You really put some thought in that. You couldn't even go on Klondike 5?
No Klondike 5. I'm not Mr. Plow.
You never will be with that attitude.
So thanks again for listening, and we will see you soon.
Okay, bye.